I'm Justin Kerprank, host of Kerpranked.
I'm Rob Ronzetti, host of this commentary.
And I'm Matt Chapman, a guest on this commentary, the musical guest.
We will have a brief musical interlude during the most dramatic scene. So this is not what he seems. The original title of this episode, believe it or not, was Stan Returns, which gives away the entire ending. Sometimes in the writer's room, you kind of have a temp title that people almost forget to change, and yeah, I swooped in at the last second and changed this to not what he seems.
Because if you don't change it, it will seep out into the world and ruin everything.
Which is a reference to, in the theme song, there's a little code which says, Stan is not what he seems, which is there since the very first episode. Our fans were so good at following the code that by this point I figured I could make a reference to that obscure code and our fans would know, and they did. So this episode, I feel, and some may disagree, but in my heart, this is the best episode of Gravity Falls.
Really?
I feel
wow.
like this is the best one we ever did. Because this episode, like, you know, there's a lot of different things that this show does. Sometimes it's more of a comedy. Sometimes it's more of a mystery.
Yeah.
We go into dramatic moments now and again, but there's parts of this episode, when I watch it over again, I get really invested. Like, my nose is up against the screen. like, I think our entire team did such a good job of orchestrating a story that took these characters, like, we spent this entire series making you believe in these characters and making them love each other, and then we threw the biggest wrench possible into that and get to a point where they're all maximally opposed, and, like, that's the highest stakes you can have.
Yeah. No, I mean, it does that very effectively. I mean, I love this episode. I'm shocked to hear you call one of your babies your favorite.
Oh, because I
hope
because the other, I hate everything
I hope
I
the
on.
Other episodes don't overhear, because they're going to be heartbroken.
So the goal broadly in this episode was, we knew that we wanted everything to come to a head when the kids are going to discover Stan's secret, and they're going to discover it in such a way that they only get little bits and pieces, and they have to decide for themselves based on the limited information if Stan's a good guy or if he's a bad guy. And ultimately that decision will be a decision of heart versus mind, and Dipper is mind, Mabel is heart, and they're fighting with the scraps of information they have for, should we trust our heart about how we feel about this guy over the course of the summer and everything we've been through, or should we trust the clues? That seemed like a believable way to get Dipper and Mabel to begin what begins a rift between them that is resolved by the end of the series.
Yeah, yeah. Matt, you were talking about the writing of this episode before we started the official commentary.
Yeah, this one required all hands on deck. This was no joke. I remember even just that intro with Stan, like, that took forever. There were so many different takes of, like, okay, well, what do you need to see at the top of this episode
yeah.
before we go? Like, we wanted to see something cool and sci-fi and X-Files-y, but it also needed to be, like this part where it's like, we need to see Stan and the kids having a lot of fun together first if this is going to mean anything at the end. Because I remember
yeah.
early on we had so much business to get to. I don't know that they had – I don't think there was a moment like this in early drafts. There's no good setup to show that, no, they do all love each other. We need to make this part at the end be more dramatic by having them connect early on.
Yeah, well, because we knew what this episode needed to build to. But it was something where multiple drafts, I remember us working on it and kind of reading through the draft, and that moment at the end is so powerful where Mabel has to decide and ultimately choose to side with Stan. But in order to put her in that headspace, I felt it was really important that we added this scene where they're at maximum bonding.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
They're up on the roof. They're shooting firecrackers. Stan knows in his heart that when
yeah.
his brother arrives, everything is going to change
yep.
in ways he can't predict. And he's really savoring this moment.
Well, because he knows even if things go completely smoothly, which they don't, the kids are still going to be mad at him, especially
yeah.
Dipper for basically lying. Like, they had this big meeting after the end of Scaryoki where, of course, Dipper also crossed his finger, but Stan crosses his fingers and says, oh, I'm telling you everything. And he knows that the kids are not going to be happy about the fact that he's been keeping this all from them, because they've done amazing things together already, and he should have trusted them before now. But
I think Stan's hope is that, you know, in Stan's mind, this is going to play out one way, which is that he's going to free his brother. His brother's going to come out of that portal after 30 years. Stan's probably imagining that Ford is weak, emaciated, wrapped in a blanket, that he'll stumble forward, his through a beard, through blurry eyes. He'll be, "My brother, is that you?" He'll embrace Dan. He'll hug him. He'll say, "All these years, I thought I was a goner, but you saved me. I was wrong to mock you. I was wrong to call you the stupid twin. Dad was wrong about you. You're the greatest man, and let's be friends again." And who are these niece and nephew? Like, that was what Stan was kind of hoping for.
Yeah.
He knows it's there's a million things that could go wrong, including potentially the destruction of this dimension. But he so desperately needs to believe that he can make up for the problems of the past that he's hoping for this. But he knows that things are going to change. His sort of the way Stan acts in this episode is, like, to me, part of what feels so grounded about it is, like, I'm a child of divorce, and, like, I know that when parents or parent figures know that hard times are coming for the kids, they kind of lay it on thick. They're like, "Who wants ice cream?"
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, Stan being extra nice to them at the beginning is, like, it's kind of a realistic thing that adults do when they know, like, big changes are coming.
Yeah.
So the art team just brought out all the stops in this episode. This sequence, storyboarded by Dana Terrace, did a phenomenal job. Something that we tracked in this episode, not every episode has a color key, which is some episodes we plan out specifically a color script where every scene has an evolving sense of color. And we only do it in a few episodes. We do it in Scaryoki, and artists did it in this one where they tracked out the sunset so that as the episode is going, I think part of what makes this episode work also is that it has the strongest ticking clock.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a
literal ticking clock.
It has
clock.
A literal ticking clock. It's also the sun is going down.
Yeah.
It's also the town is starting to rift apart.
Yep.
As the characters are starting to rift apart. There's just such a sense of doomsday. And even though we have like a three-part apocalypse, to me, nothing feels as apocalyptic as this episode.
Now, the gravity abnormalities, that felt like it was not, we didn't quite have that figured out when we launched into this. We had to figure out how to bring magic into this episode because there's only needs to be a magic element. And we kind of struggled with that at first. I don't remember if we had something before the gravity or if we just had an absence of magic for a while.
I remember
it was paranormal jail. Was it at one point he was put in paranormal jail?
Oh,
I remember that was like a temp early version was like it had the same structure, but Stan was put in a weird like jail full of other gravity falsy kind of anomalies, and we were like, "Oh, that's way too much."
Yeah, I remember the paranormal jail scene was super cool, but it was like, there's so many things we're trying to do in this episode. There was also a version where he meets Gideon in jail.
Yeah.
We talked about him maybe trying to break out with Gideon.
Yeah,
That's right.
But that seemed to just hijack the story.
Yeah. I mean, again, it was a great concept, but, you know, there's only so much room in these episodes. And actually, season two, our episodes had to be a little shorter due to just some network changes and where we were being aired, which meant we had to be really, really careful with our time. In fact, this sequence you're watching, this did not exist in any version of the script. We used to have a whole other sequence, which was super entertaining, where Dipper and Mabel were trapped. They were locked in the schoolhouse overnight.
Right,
government agents left them there.
Yeah.
And Dipper and Mabel had to break out of the schoolhouse. They had to apprehend Stan. They used Quentin Tremblay's president's key to get out of there.
Yep.
It was maybe 2 minutes long or something. And
it was too long.
It was too long. And at the last minute, I just had to cut that scene, and I storyboarded this crazy scene where they're in the back of the car. They write several times. They crash into the thing. Both of the scenes end the same way, which is Dipper and Mabel getting the jump on the agent, and the agent being the voice of Dipper's skepticism of planting the seed in his mind of like, your uncle's a con man and you're willing to risk everything to trust him. Are you going to be another sap? We always knew that the scene had to get to this point, but it used to be much, much longer. Often you have to make really tough choices for time and momentum.
Oh yeah, all the time, especially on the show. We would find ourselves that we were like 2-3 minutes over when we got something into animatic, and then it was just, okay, we got to sacrifice something.
Well, some
but I think that was a good sacrifice. I feel like that scene is so superior. It's got greater momentum. Just, it's got literal motion in it. You know what I mean? Like, the kids are moving in that scene while they're in the truck during the crash. It's just, it's good. It's,
I mean, there's definitely stuff I miss about the old version, but I
mean, there were good bits in it, of course, but I'm just talking in the terms of the filmmaking and the rhythm of this episode, that works so much better, I think.
Sometimes you have to,
it just gets us moving along.
Cut the scene at the, you know, for the expense of the scene, but for the benefit of the episode.
Aw, baby-sized.
It's happening!
This is McGucket being used for his best possible use, which is to prepare for the end of the world and make you terrified. Like, there's that feeling that, you know, the rats are scattering the Titanic, like something really big is about to go down. Like each scene ratchets up a feeling that we're getting closer to something really huge, which is part of why I love this episode so much. This was also something that we originally, earlier drafts of this episode, had insanely complicated plans for how Dipper and Mabel were going to sneak into this shack. All these crazy Rube Goldberg stuff. And ultimately, we just had to use the grappling hook again. We just didn't have time to make it more of a movie.
In that scene, Mabel is basically pitching the ideas that we had for like how they get in. And when Dipper's like, no, he's the story editor in this case. No, we have to get moving along. We have to get on to the next scene.
That's exactly right. The point Matt made earlier is true, that this is an episode that was so difficult that, you know, we had multiple drafts, and there was a point at which we had to split the episode up into teams and have every writer take a couple scenes. So it really is the fruit of all of our labor, and then it was just sort of an effort for kind of me to sit down and plug them all together and kind of try to get everything to fit and try to really point each scene towards our conclusion. This scene storyboarded by Alonzo Ramirez Ramos. Fantastic job of, there's an escalating tension in the scene when they turn on the light, you get that green light, and they start looking through Stan's IDs, and they start having growing suspicion that Stan might not be Stan. It's pretty potent stuff. I think this is, like, out of all the act breaks in the history of the show, this is the one where when I go to commercial, I have got to come back. Because this act break is them saying, wait, Stan might be a random grifter who maybe killed our real uncle?
Yeah.
That's pretty heavy for any show, let alone a cartoon show.
Yeah, well, the extreme, what that would mean for them if all this stuff is true is so much further than just like, oh, he lied to us about a couple things. It's just like, no, he's straight up just some random dude that we don't even know. And it's like, yeah, and the guy that I've been pining for this whole time is dead.
Well, we really try to stack the deck. So it's like Mabel's perspective and Dipper's perspective are both kind of racing to see who gets in front. And there'll be a moment where it's like, yeah, you kind of buy with Mabel. She feels good about Stan. And then this scene is the most you're ever with Dipper, where we discover this huge, crazy curveball. And this feeling that you have looking at this newspaper and looking through these fake IDs, this is how Dipper feels all the time. If you want a window about what it's like to be Dipper, this moment where a giant conspiracy reveals itself out of little pieces and seems to suggest that no one is trustworthy, like, that's where Dipper lives. And this, to him, confirms every bit of suspicion and every bit of paranoia he's ever had, and he's willing to run with it.
Why did Stan keep a clipping of himself titled Grifter at Large?
I think he thought he looked cool in that picture.
You know, I kind of have a Clint Eastwood look in this Grifter at Large photo. I think maybe I'll use this as an about the author one day. I got to hold on to this one. You know what? I'm a criminal, but I'm a nostalgic criminal. Loving the past is my greatest crime.
Any minute now. Any minute, Justin.
Can't believe it. This whole summer I've been looking for answers, and the biggest mystery was right under our nose.
Oh, there's gotta be.
This was, we would work with the promo team at Disney Channel to try to be very careful that they didn't give away spoilers at the ends of episodes. And this is probably the most I ever reviewed trailers. Like, I demanded them show me the trailer 5 times because I was so scared that one shot would let slip and our fans would be able to guess the entire ending.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If this is one of my favorite episodes of the series, this is one of my favorite sequences in the entire series.
Oh, man, this puts Inception to shame, this whole sequence.
Our artists always impress me. Our artists always do a great job. But this was one time where I remember seeing the storyboards of this, and I was just blown away.
Now, was this Dana again, or was this Steve Sandoval, the director? I can't remember.
Our director, Steven Sandoval, did a wonderful job in this episode, and he thumbnailed out the sequence. So he really did the choreography, figured out how it would work, and then Dana, who was one of our junior storyboard artists at the time, cleaned it up.
Okay.
Essentially animated it. And
well, she was an animator in her truest passion.
Yeah, and we didn't quite know how this was all going to work, but like I said, when I saw the storyboards, it managed to make Stan this awesome action hero while still keeping him Stan.
Yeah, I like the fact that he steals a wallet in the middle of it. I assume that's not his wallet that he grabs.
Definitely
not. I assume it was someone else's.
No, he steals a wallet, he smashes somebody against a wall, he sasses them, but he also has this just great Inception moment, and it's because we're building to a big question about who is Stan. I felt a moment of seeing him be kind of awesome, like,
right,
further increases your, like, who is this guy really? right? He keeps going back and forth between like, oh, geez, my back. And you're like, all right, that's the Stan I know. And then like, whoa, he just did an awesome jailbreak. Is he some kind of super villain? Who is he, really?
Yeah, well, and that and with Scaryoki earlier on, too, you know, you really got to see Stan, the Street Fighter and Stan come out, too.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, there's more of Ford and Stan than I think Stan realizes. I think it only comes out in certain moments. This was, I was watching a lot of Breaking Bad at the time, and that was sort of my, that was my Bible for what does a tense situation look like. And there's a whole concept where, spoiler alert, there's a situation where Walt and Jesse turn against each other, and this idea that like, Dipper must face Seuss, that Seuss has this choice. Every character faces their worst possible choice, which is, you know, Mabel must choose between Dipper and Stan, and Seuss must choose between Stan and the kids.
Yeah. Like, you know, guard that thing with your life. I'm not going to explain to you why.
Like, I believe that Seuss would do anything to guard Mr. Pines's secrets.
Oh, and these are the only two characters that could possibly make him doubt Stan.
Yeah.
The two kids that he loves so much.
We had waited so long teasing this vending machine. Audiences have been waiting so long at this point to see what's behind it that it was so exciting to finally figure this out and design it and to see these characters go down here. We figured that if we did our job right as writers, that audiences would just be frozen to the edge of their seats at this point, just having no idea what's
like
about to happen
even
next.
The audience has been down there plenty of times at this point, but I think it's really cool that it is still just as tense to see them in there the first time because you know
their
what all
reactions.
That means.
Yeah, to ground it with what they and they each one of them, you know, it's like a dream, it's like a video game, it's like a nightmare. That's pretty much summing up these characters' minds in a single phrase. But what is it doing underneath the mystery shack? Okay. This idea that there is a totem pole that's also a telescope or a
periscope.
That was another one from our storyboard artist, Alonzo. We hadn't planned it out, and then when we saw it, we're like, yep, put it in, done.
Well, Alonzo was the one, did he not storyboard the first time we see the portal room in the end of season one?
And that's when he figured it out. And once we discovered how amazing he was, we tended to give him these extra ambitious dramatic sequences. I think this sequence right here is actually storyboarded by Steven Sandoval, and then as we head into the final climax, it goes into Alonzo's boards. Now, there is no logical reason that Ford would break this up into all these books this way, but up until this point, he's been shown as this sort of all-knowing, mysterious puzzle master that it felt appropriate, even though it's not logical. It works for the storytelling, I feel.
Yeah.
So when Ford wrote that, that's when he was super sleep deprived. He realized that Bill had betrayed him. He was starting to have a hard time differentiating between fantasy and reality. He was losing sleep and scribbling all sorts of, you know, lunatic serial killer looking stuff about the end of the world. These types of effects that you're seeing right now, this is not normal for television production.
Nope.
There's a pipeline where we create art, we send it overseas, they send it back, and it's finished. But for this particular episode, our art director, Ian, who's a master of paint and line, is also a master of effects. And he squirreled away the time to really, really add extra effects himself for this episode to make this feel like as dramatic and visually powerful as it possibly could. And this sequence is one that Alonzo won an Emmy for storyboarding.
Yeah. Well, he did an amazing job.
Like, all of his... Ian, in After Effects on his own, made like that whirling portal
and
stuff?
Yeah, he did that. He did some of the exterior shots where the town is being affected. He animates the whole shot where the shack actually lifts off the ground and then falls back to Earth.
Yeah, that shot where the shack lifts into the air. This completely animated by Ian, like with the
Holy
goat
smokes.
From overseas dropped on top. This is
That's fantastic.
This is a bit. I won't lie. This is a bit inspired by the climax of Fooly-Cooly. That's an anime that includes a very apocalyptic climax, and this idea of everything kind of hovering just felt like the end of the world, and it's definitely a visual touch point that I was thinking of when I realized, yes, we should have gravity literally start to fall in this episode. All this choreography, the idea that the button was inside that same
right.
lever that Stan had used at the end of Gideon Rises. This idea of the way that they're fighting and how they're separated.
It's all Alonzo.
Alonzo is the one who figured this out. In particular, this idea that the portal blast knocks them against the wall to the point where it's clear that only Mabel can make the choice. And we really save tears in this show. Michael Rianda, our creative director, hates it when characters cry in animation and says, characters should only cry when it's like life or death, when it's really the ultimate climax. And so we save tears. We rarely use them, but here's where it felt appropriate. And here's where you could tell that I'm watching a lot of Breaking Bad, because Stan says, it was all for my family, Skyler. That's why I did this. Yeah, those are all Ian's effects right there.
Well, when you can have anti-gravity tears, too, that's really, I feel
yeah.
like, that's the ultimate
maximum use.
Those are the most tragic tears.
Oh, man, even just talking over it, I'm getting chills a little
I
bit.
Know,
like,
it's hard.
It's such a hard decision she has to make. Like,
I trust you.
Yeah, and the way that this was, every artist was just bringing their game.
Robert Ryan Corey did all these special poses.
These special poses,
up.
there. These are, yeah, designed by Robert Ryan Corey. I remember when I saw the designs, I thought there's no way anyone can animate that, but I was wrong. The Overseas Studio did a wonderful job of animating it. This is a symbolic here. The Dipper and Mabel image shattering is sort of meant to suggest that this big decision that Mabel has made has changed everything forever. All this, Ian.
Yep.
It's getting something that looks that good just doesn't happen on its own. And this shot of him... Oh, let's see. He walks up. We had a number of different versions of this. He used to be made out of electricity. A lot of different versions of figuring out how this scene would work. And figuring out the order of the dialogue. Does he say, my brother, the author of the journals? And boom, animated by Dana Terrace.
Yeah.
After Effects by Ian. And I felt like Seuss after seeing this animation. I was like, peace out, dudes. I'm going to faint. Too dope. Can't cope. You're too good.
I feel like that was in there from a very early draft too. Like that, that was decided pretty early on that joke would end the episode.
That was Matt Chapman line. No, that was 100%. You're like, you know, what is it, like permission to faint or I'm gonna faint right now?
yeah.
Which one was
gonna faint? Seuss is a fan of the show, even though he's in it. He's a big fan of Gravity Falls, and
he
this episode killed him.
I felt like the fans felt the same way as Seuss.